tell me exactly how those models work and what kind of information goes into them.
Sure. So there are several different strategies for modeling the spread of infectious disease, and there's not great consensus on what the best strategy is. And that's why you get these multiple different model versions that are floating around that give you different predictions. And so some of these models are using mathematical equations, so a little bit of calculus and differential equations to try to understand how different classes of people will change over time. So people who are susceptible versus they're exposed but not yet infectious, or then they're infectious but they're asymptomatic, and et cetera. So we have these different classes of individuals that we're trying to understand how the numbers of individuals in each one of those classes can change over time.
So one of the limitations is that the models are only as good as the data that goes into them.
Right. And so some of these models can be quite sensitive to some of the parameters. For example, how long does it take from when an individual is exposed to when they start shedding the virus and they're infectious? We might need to understand parameters like, if you become infectious and symptomatic, how long might it take between you getting those symptoms and visiting a hospital? And those parameters are important if we want to understand how COVID-19 might affect hospitalization rates.
Are there other shortfalls or limitations that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I think one of the biggest limitations is that when you think about the weather, let's say, there's a lot of models that try to predict what the weather will be in the future, how bad a hurricane might be. And there's a whole government organization, the National Weather Service, that develops these models and comes to a consensus about which model will do the best job, or which combination of models will do the best job of predicting this weather phenomenon and the uncertainty in the weather phenomenon. There's not that type of consensus building necessarily with disease models. I think that's changing pretty rapidly. There are calls to come to consensus and to really rigorously test the different models and to understand which ones are doing a better job than others, so that we can move forward with those best models rather than having this splattering of many different models.
So given all this complexity that we're talking about, how do you use a model or models to help us make decisions?
I think there are kind of two different ways to look at modeling in terms of informing public health policy. One of those is that models can make short-term forecasts, meaning we can try to predict what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And so this could help policymakers understand, okay, in the short term, how many resources do we need to devote to this disease? Or are we going to be at a shortfall for the hospital beds or the ventilators in our region? Models then can also be used for more longer term predictions, but with a lot of caveats. So we know that we can't predict in the future. We don't know what's going to happen 3 months from now even. But we can use our models to try to understand scenarios of what might happen or what might be the worst case that could happen. Across the country, all of the lockdowns and interventions and wearing masks definitely slowed down the disease. And so now we're reaching a point where, okay, some of those interventions are being lifted. How will that affect the spread of the disease? We don't quite know yet.
Joe Mihaljevic, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thanks for your time, Melissa.